Spark Your Fire podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
There's no losing, only learning. There's no failure, only opportunities. And there's no problems, only solutions.
Welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and with me today is our good co-host Jazz Stana, back on again, actually back on Earth this time, I should say, with the aurora behind you. Jazz, welcome back.
I'm back on Earth in Bahamas.
Nice one.
Getting ready for our next party.
You've done all your gold mining, obviously, I'm assuming.
Yeah. It was way too much gold. I got bored of it.
John's going to be disappointed with that statement, though. Don't get him started. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. talking of gold, our guest today is from that state where it's all about commodities and gold, especially. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We've got Gavin Hagney back on from Perth. So, you know, I know we've been talking Perth for quite a bit, and it's always good to be able to get a local to give us some on the ground information and share what's actually happening on the ground. So I thought, you know, who else better than Gavin, who's obviously a commentator, a valuer with over 30 years of property experience in this field, be able to share some of his insights on currently what's happening on the ground. So welcome, Gav. Welcome back.
Hi, guys. I must admit, 30 years experience, you know, but I've never lived through a pandemic. So it's a new experience for me. Hopefully one off.
Well, I'm sure that that's another box to tick off again this time, and to add to your credentials, I guess, isn't it? So,
yeah, well, if I was old enough, I could have done the Spanish flu or something like that. So I'd be drawing that experience, but hopefully I don't have to live that long.
No, it's all good. So, yeah, look, I think we had you on last year, you know, obviously had some really positive feedback from our listeners in terms of sharing your personal journey and your property experiences. What's currently happening on Perth, on the ground? I guess that's what's most listeners, especially the East Coast listeners, including me and Jazz, will be keen to know. You know, what is actually happening on the ground? Are we seeing like hundreds of people through inspections, and are we seeing people like lining up, prices going over the roof like a lot of the East Coast cities? Or can you give us a bit of insight there?
Yeah, I mean, in short, it's really patchy, but there's remnants of boom time behaviour. And when I say remnants, there's a fair bit of boom time behaviour, particularly top end, and particularly in the price category from about 650,000 to 1.1, 1.2. And so when I say boom time behaviour, 20, 30, 40, 50 people throw a home open, cars all down the street, lasting on the market no longer than a week, more like a day, multiple offers and selling above asking price. So the buyers are saying, we're prepared to pay higher than asking price. That's boom time behaviour. And one thing I've learned in the three or four cycles that I've seen outside of pandemics, that is that boom time behaviour in those sectors of the market don't mean a market's rising by 2 or 3%. Usually that translates into more like a 15 to 30% sort of per annum increase. So if that behaviour continues, we're in for significant lifts in those areas of the market that are portraying that. And ultimately, the area that where they're portraying that and sees those lifts, that'll transpose into other sectors of the market, a knock-on effect or a ripple effect, if you like, in the course of time.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to get into the property market in Perth without asking the question on the commodities. And I told you, Gavin, before we cover commodities on the podcast, but it's fair to say that this run property cycle that we are seeing, especially in the Perth market, is purely being driven by commodities at the moment? Or is it just a natural cycle after a lag of what about 7, 8, 10 years now? Which of the two?
Yeah, really interesting, Jess, because I mean, I think something like directly and indirectly, about 43% of West Australia's economy is tied to commodities. Mm-hmm. So you can't ignore commodities if you're investing in Western Australia, which is both the strength and the weakness of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, though, I think this time around, commodities is just part of the cycle, part of the story. And the reason I say that is because Perth's experiencing something the same as virtually every capital city in Australia, where normally there's somewhere between 300,000 people outside of Australia at any one time, and they've all wanted to come home. And so what's happened is tourism switched off, migration switched off, but with Australians returning home, they've got to live somewhere. So they're not going into hotel rooms. So the hotel rooms are empty, bar you know, people isolating. They're going to residential accommodation. So they're either buying or they're renting. So all of that pressure that normally would go into tourism, the tide's gone out in tourism, but the tide's come in on rental accommodation and purchasing. And that's happening right around Australia in different places at different degrees. It's happening a fair magnitude in Western Australia right now. So if we look at the number of properties available for sale, well down. Because people have come into Perth, relocated back into Perth, and they've bought a home to live in. The rental accommodation, well down. And if you look at the numbers, you know, the down sort of listings are down somewhere about 9 or 10,000. Properties available for rent probably down about 3 or 4,000. So we probably had about between 10 and 15,000 homes drain out of the system as people locate back into Perth. And we've probably had about 30 or 40,000 people locate back into Perth, which is, you know, kind of three people per household on average, 2.5 people per household or thereabouts, which is a normal number. So an understanding of why it's come about is so important. But it's hit at a time in Perth when we had a very low vacancy rate. And so our rents are, you know, rising quite strongly now. We had a limited number of properties available for sale, and we were due for an upswing as well in our cycle. So kind of like a bit of a perfect storm for Perth in a sense. And then the commodities was just the icing on the cake. So it might be 10 or 20% of the reason, but it's certainly this time it's not, you know, 80, 90% of the reason.
We've seen in the past when it's commodities, Perth market does that old boom and bust story where from all of a sudden, no growth for like 10 years, it will just go, it will shoot itself to the moon, whatever it is, 100, 200%, 50%, whatever that figure is, right? You already talked about that there's, when you look at the open houses and all, there's quite a few people showing up over there, right? But with this cycle, and we have been discussing commodities a lot on our podcast, especially gold, silver, and some of the rare earth metals, and Perth shines in all those spaces. How far of a run do you see, and how big of a run do you see, and do you think this run will be sustainable, or it will be like the ones in the past where it came crashing down later?
Yeah. Oh, look, Perth, you've got to get used to a boom bust cycle. So it's a bit like trading in a sense that, you know, the old adage of buy real estate, hold it, never sell it, probably doesn't really apply for Perth. You know, timing is everything in Perth market. That's the first thing I'd say. And if you look at, you know, our market's been down now over 20% and over 6 years. I mean, that's a pretty big, you know, pretty big bust and rust. And so therefore, you know, it needs to lift minimum of 20% just to get back sort of kind of to where it was, you know, over that period of time or thereabouts. I know mathematically, it you know, statistically it's different. And then you need probably another 10 or 20% just to have a reasonable return over the next, over the last 5 or 6 years in real terms. So, you know, our market really, dare I say, kind of probably needs to do almost 50% to actually make sense if you just took the last 6 years and took the next 6 years. I don't think we're in for a 50%, because I think we're in a pandemic mode. And what my concern is that housing markets now all of a sudden forecast to be quite strong around Australia. If you look at, say, something like the Commonwealth Bank stats yesterday. And if that is the case, on the radar screen already, and the expectation of, say, bonds increasing by the end of next year, by 30% or thereabouts in their interest rate, you know, interest rates and curbs on lending and restricting investment lending could be on our radar screen next year, trying to slow things down. So it's got a fair run, but I think it'll be slowed down next year by some of those factors, rising bond rates, possibly curbing lending, those other things that they need to slow down the economy. As everyone's vaccinated and as we get back to business and everything trucks on, and a lot of businesses now reporting on the stock exchange and saying, hey, it's recovering quicker than what we thought. And you're hearing the JB Hi-Fi saying, hey, you know, it's hard to get, you know, television sets and other things like that. So, you know, you're already hearing the noises of restricted supply and therefore possibility of inflation. You're already hearing those noises if you choose to listen carefully. So I think we'll have a pretty strong run for the next year, mm-hmm. year and a half. And I think with this current behaviour, it's more like a 20% run than a 2% run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you buy right, it's worth riding through that next phase because you bought the right type of property. But if you're purely speculating, you know, is it worth getting in for 20% and getting out? Probably not. In and out costs are going to hurt you.
Exactly.
Maybe you're better off trading commodities or resources or something else.
Yeah. So is it fair to say in that case, the people who have been under the water, who bought at the last peak of whenever that was in 2012-13, they probably still won't be able to recover their money in this run by the sounds of it, if the predictions were to come true?
Yeah, I think they'll recover their money and they'll eventually breathe a sigh of relief as we go from sort of, you know, hope through relief into optimism, and they'll finally get a bit excited at the end. And often what happens is they get a bit excited and they decided, you know, this is pretty good, and they, you know, might step into a market, and that hence they step in at the top, you know. And I think I can see that going to happen here too. You know, I can see people getting a bit disillusioned now, a bit hard to buy. They'll step away. It'll go up 10-15% or something like that, and I go, oh no, we just got to make the plunge. And they'll finally decide, no, we're going to make the effort and plunge and go in, and they'll go in at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So look, Perth's still, you know, sitting at the cheapest median house price in Australia. It should probably be about fourth spot, and to move into fourth spot, unless others fall away, it needs a 20-25% lift to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I still think, you know, you want to move into the bottom part of the cycle, but you still got to buy the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bit like, well, you know, you could say, well, I can buy on this commodity, but you bought the wrong company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and what's moving this market is low interest rates, borrowing capacity, and it's the financial horsepower that people have, the access to borrowing, which when confidence returns, the average loan sizes haven't moved over the last 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of Australia, average loan sizes have moved up 25%. But over the last 5 or 6 years, borrowing capacity is up 50%. So demand is always the number of people with the amount of money in their hands. And this is not necessarily more people other than the people coming back and locating over this 12-18-month period, but it's also about more money in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put potentially 50% more borrowing capacity in people's hands, what do you think will happen when confidence returns? They'll borrow,
mm-hmm.
and they'll pay breakout prices, and they'll be supported through borrowings. Because mm-hmm. housing markets are often started by cash. People make money in mining, some other sector, gold, iron ore, whatever the case may be. They go and buy a bigger house, and then the market's filled in, and that confidence, that breakout price is filled in with people coming in with borrowed money,
mm-hmm.
with high cash flows, but they can borrow, and that then supports that price the person's paid. So I think this borrowing wave will come into Perth, as also there's already signs of people coming in from Sydney and Melbourne, Sydney particularly, buying sight unseen investment properties. And you know, so there's already a little bit of that starting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and what drives any market is new demand. If you and I are selling houses to each other, we might have done zero on, but it's zero sum game. Mm-hmm. As soon as you put first home buyers, overseas buyers, or people relocating back to Perth, mm-hmm. or into any city, investors, that's all new demand. And that new demand is what causes prices to rise. Otherwise, we're just shifting chairs in the Titanic.
Mm-hmm. What will tell you that you are at the top of the cycle? I mean, obviously commodities, you something to look at is the commodities market, but what based on your experience will be a perfect indicator to say the market has really become frothy or is at its top kind of thing?
Yeah, usually when people start ringing me and telling me what's going on in the market, it's usually time to get out. when they're ringing and asking questions, it's usually time to get in. Look, normal behaviour. Things are different now. You know, we've all heard that sort of. When you get very high rate of investors in the property market, normally that signifies not the bottom of the market, but the top of the market. Because everyone wants to pile in at the top because there's all this social proof and evidence that values have gone up so much, and I want some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Also. The actual peak, the very peak, what happens in residential prices, just it's not just in Perth, it's all around the country, is you'll see sales volumes will drop off. And sales volumes will drop off, and then prices will continue to rise on thin volumes for about 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like a crash that you get on the share market and on the day you miss it. you've got a, usually got a 3 month, minimum 3 month warning, if not 6 month. But people don't want to believe that because they want it to continue. They need it to continue. They want it to continue and they stay in. And then out comes all the adages, oh, but hey, property's a long-term investment. Yeah. Well, how do you turn a really good investment, an outperforming investment, into an average investment? Hang on to it for too long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's that euphoria stage, basically, you're talking about, where euphoria hits in and everyone just wants to believe that this drug is going to last forever. And that's where you get kind of stuck.
Exactly right, Jazz. You know, when you know, euphoria turns to anxiety and then denial. And then when all the property developers come out and tell you there's nothing to worry about, now's the time to really worry, because that's the denial phase. And then we go into the fear, panic, capitulation, despair, despondency phase. So when people with vested interests start defending the market, that's you're probably over the top. So just watch the sales volumes. So sales volumes will drop away. Prices will continue on thin volumes. That's a warning sign, but not time to get out yet. When you start hearing people defending the market and things are different now and all the rest, and things have gone up so much, there's no need to worry and everything's great, that's the time to worry.
Mm-hmm. So what will your top three picks be in the Perth market for the investors who are on the lookout currently?
Yeah, well, if you're a capital growth investor, and residential is all about capital growth, even though our gross yields are somewhere around 4.5% at the moment, so it's almost a yield play. But I believe buy land value only, or close to land value only, so 70%, 80% of the value in your land. It's being driven at the moment by money looking for homes, not home units or apartments. And we love the coast in Western Australia. So, you know, for instance, there's a corridor basically from Scarborough, which is sort of draw a line from the city straight to the beach. You get to City Beach. From there north, from there up along the coast, right through, you've got all price points. Buying entry-level homes along that coastal strip, you know, within about sort of 5Ks of the city, 5Ks of the coast, sorry, even closer if you can, within 2Ks of the coast if you can, right up that whole strip. Entry-level homes, scarce locations where there's not a lot of supply coming out. It's pretty well what you're looking for.
Interesting. With COVID hitting the world last year, should the investment for investors, should the investment strategy change in any shape or form? The ones who are investing specifically in the Perth market, like if we talk a lot about Melbourne and Sydney, where there's already been a shift from city, people flocking to burbs or country areas, sea change kind of thing. What's with the Perth market? Does that shifts the narrative at all, or it's still the same basically?
Yeah, I think it changes investment strategy somewhat, and it really reprices liquidity. And so, you know, in uncertain times, liquidity is invaluable because you can move in and move out of a market. So all I would say that in the absence of liquidity, and residential market is not liquid, you're always looking at 10-year chunks of time. Then the next thing to look at is the caliber of the asset and the cash flow that supports that asset. So, you know, what you've got now is you can buy homes that you can rent out, you know, by the room or house and granny flat. And in a very low interest rate environment with gross yields up around 4.5%, you can structure it so that you've got a high caliber asset, mostly land value, so it's a capital gainer. But the way you structure your tenancy and your arrangement and what you've bought, you can actually end up with positive cash flow. Now, if you're in positive cash flow and you've got a growth asset, even if rents were to come back a little bit, you're still protected. So I think there's an investment strategy. You want to, you can't go for liquidity, but you can go for cash flow and quality of asset. So therefore, that protects size of borrowings and debt, and it also is a way of getting a return at a far lower risk.
So, with the interest rates at their rock bottom, fixed rate you can get under 1% these days for 4 years, easy. Even CBA, which is a top tier, is offering that right now. Do you see, I mean, you already mentioned that maybe 50% growth in this property cycle or whatever that number is, right? Do you see the kind of growth that we used to see in the past in all capital cities, including Perth, where the property generally, as a rule of thumb, 10 years, give it 10 years, 7 to 12 years, and used to double. Do you see that over the, do you see history repeating itself basically? Or with these low interest rates and them staying there for ever, if not going up, then there's no more room left for growth? It's all becoming a yield play?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. If you put 10 people around a table, someone's going to make some more money than the others, and they're going to buy a bigger house. So, you know, people make money in dividends, profits, bonuses, speculative gains, and then they buy a bigger house. So residential tends to run at towards the end of the cycle, not the start of the cycle. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is aspirational housing will always be in demand and will always keep pace with wealth creation. And if you believe that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting no poorer, or poor are getting poorer, and the gap's widening, then aspirational housing and investing in areas which are aspirationally desirable, you're going to always make a gain.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, any blind Freddie over the last 30 years just buy anything that goes up. Mm-hmm. I've never really subscribed to that view. So, you know, if you're in that space, maybe that's a, you know, that's equivalent of, you know, an ETF that tracks the index.
Yeah.
But in the residential space, you know, I still like land value. I still like scarce locations. That's why I like coastal locations where you might have three or four feeder suburbs, you know, people in three or four suburbs that want to, if they had some more money, they'd buy in that suburb, which is a bit close to the coast. Mm-hmm. I want to buy in that suburb that's close to the coast and look for the right property type in there, mm-hmm. duplex half or something like that, rather than buying in an area where there's plenty of supply or where it's one of the feeder suburbs into the best suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
So aspirational housing and low interest rates mean borrowing capacity up. So every $1 million 6 years ago cost you 45, 50 grand. Every $1 million in borrowings today, you know, probably cost you 20.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of housing over the last 5 or 6 years is halved.
Yeah. That's
when you halve the cost of something, normally demand goes up. you just got to be a bit more street smart. So that's why I like entry level housing, and I like, you know, areas that are situationally being rezoned and that area is being upgraded. Some reason for it to go up. And if you don't know the reason why that area is going to go up, then you're just punting on the market. I go, maybe you go and punt on another market.
Yeah.
How do you find those information, Gavin? Just out of curiosity, I guess, for, you know, anyone who's kind of entry to try to get into the WA. I know in, you know, if it's rezoning, council website's usually the first one to go. Is that also the case for WA as well?
Yeah, David, it is. And it's, you know, if you want to do your own research, local councils and their current zonings, but also their rezone policies, their new housing strategies, and they're all alive with those at the moment. There's a new state government regulation that says between now and 2031, we want 47% of all new houses in the inner and middle ring of Perth. So right. All these local councils have been told, go and rezone near Resort because we don't want to keep expanding. We want to put more in. So therefore, little old house on block, which was single residential, now becomes duplex, triplex, quadruplex site, or high density. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a bit of a no-brainer to make money. But if you want to invest in that and you don't want to do all the owner home, where you have to understand all that, it costs you very little. Go and get a buyer's agent.
Yeah.
You know, really, I mean, they're in the game. They know every bit and piece. You know, for a $500 to $1 million investment, you're probably spending somewhere between 10 and 20 grand. It's money well spent. And the other part of it, which is really interesting, is time out of the market costs you money now. So if the market's going up 12% a year, 1% a month, if it takes you 3 months to do it, it's cost you 3%. Well, that's less than getting a buyer's agent who can get it done now.
Right.
So time is money at the moment in the Perth market. And if it takes you 3 months to find the right property, it's going to cost you money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, timing is critically important. I think that's definitely the key message that we've got out of your conversation, this one. I've also quite intrigued about how, I know you do valuations as well. How do investors find out land values in Perth, or if there's a way to find out land values in Perth?
Yeah, so if you're in a new area where they're selling blocks of land, very easy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you're in a built-up area where they're not selling blocks of land, look to see if they're knocking down houses. And if they're knocking down houses and rebuilding, then you're getting a rejuvenation of the area, which is always good, makes the area look better. Whatever price they paid, knock down that house is your land value.
Okay, okay.
And if they're subdividing blocks, buying them and subdividing them, again, you've got land value component as well.
Mm-hmm.
Look, and bottom line, worst case scenarios, you know, ask the agent what's the underlying land value.
Would they be able to give you that information? Like I was thinking more thinking like, for example, in New South Wales, the council rate sometimes will basically give you your estimated land value. Is that equivalent in WA in that sense?
No, it's not really. It's misleading. Misleading.
Okay.
because they're done at a point in time and then phased in over a 3 or 4 year period. So then they use gross rental values rather than site values. So
yeah. That's kind of what I figured as well. So there's really no, I mean, systematic way to, I mean, you have to actually look at sales history. You have to look at what people are doing in order to try to work backwards to yeah. determine what the actual land values are. Is that the case?
If you're investing your money, do it right and do it accurate.
Mm.
So look at what's been sold if you're doing it yourself and what they've knocked down.
Yep.
Look at what current other blocks are around somewhere and interpolate. Get it far more exact. You're going to get a far more exact answer that way than you are by looking at council rates or guessing, if you like.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
And it's an important calculation, very important. So you're on the money there.
Yeah. Are you seeing valuations coming in under at the moment in terms of the purchase prices, given the fact that there's been a huge FOMO in the market? I'm assuming not just in Sydney and Melbourne and capital cities, Perth is also the case. And I think the main, because it's mainly owner occupiers that's been driving up the market. We're starting to see trips and drabs of investors coming in. But, you know, as a valuer, and I guess from yourself, your colleagues, are you starting to see that people are paying because of that fear of missing out? They're overpaying their, and the valuation didn't come in hitting what the purchase price is.
Yeah. So valuation, if you look at the valuation process, something's worth today
mm-hmm.
only what the last one sold for.
Correct.
And in a moving market that's increasing, you're always going to be wrong because, you know, sold for 500, next one, someone's offered 520. Well, that sold for 500. It's exactly the same as this one, so therefore it's worth 500. No, but someone's paid 520.
Yeah.
That becomes a new sales event. So value will always be behind the curve and it'll always be low. What does become interesting sometimes when you get policy stimulus like free money to build a new home, people go out and rush out and buy blocks and they take the free money and they build a new home. So the cost evidence, and this is where it starts to become really interesting for an investor. You know, you buy a block for 200, build for 200, it owes you 400, you know, and it actually owes you a bit more because of time effective money while you're building, you're not getting a return, etc. Might owe you 420. But you can go and buy exactly the same thing around the corner for maybe 385. It's already done, it's 1 year old. So people are taking, you know, $50,000 or $60,000 free money to lose half of it, if not all of it, because it's incentivized for new, but it's not incentivized for established. And you get this two-tier market. Far smarter to be buying the one-year-old
one. That's for sure. Yeah.
and whenever you get, you know, cost does not equal value. Whenever cost is above value, there's an opportunity. Whenever value is above cost, there's a development opportunity.
Mm.
And so it's always a relative game between the two. And if you can, you know, benchmark those two, that's where the opportunities for investors as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't have many more property questions, David. I was about to switch gears.
That's right.
Just some fun questions, Kevin. More bullish, gold or silver?
Well, I'm
on this one.
My crypto should be in there too.
I hope it's gold because I'm not holding any silver at the moment. I'm holding gold.
All right. Prediction for gold in this bull run, if it is a run.
Yeah.
And maybe for silver as well, if you keep.
Not as high as it would have been because I think there's a bit of leakage out into cryptocurrencies and elsewhere. For that type of holder who's, it's just a straight emotional commodity, fear commodity. So gold this time around, maybe it's at its peak already.
Right. So did I get that right? You're saying that it's already at its peak. It's already hit its peak 2000.
I've heard too many people say it's really bullish and looking really good into the future, which the contrarian in me says.
Interesting. Then the property run is already over. how about silver? Any targets on silver?
The things that I was reading said that silver relative to gold is way undervalued because the relativity is out of alignment. The analyst in me says that, you know, if you were going to take a speculative position on either one, you'd probably take a speculative position on silver now.
Mm-hmm. Bitcoin will replace gold or will exceed the market of gold, the total market value of gold, which is about 10, 11 trillion, or it's just a fad?
If you just compare nothing else than gold and Bitcoin, you'd probably buy Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's real, it's tangible, it's usable. We will have some currency in the world that is electronically based.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, my only concern with Bitcoin, and I haven't invested in Bitcoin, missed that one, at this stage, is the reserve. If it really becomes a seriously used currency, the Reserve Bank of this world can just go, bang, we've got our own currency. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
How the private commercial trader is looking now. So that was my only concern. But I love the blockchain technology, and I like the concept of Bitcoin, and I expect it to have a place in the future. At this stage, it's still a little bit of speculation as to who will survive and how it will look.
Interesting. That's great. That's all I had, mate. Look, Gavin, I appreciate your time. Perth market is obviously very interesting at the moment, so we wanted to cover it, like we said at the start. So super appreciate jumping on the show, and we'll probably bring you back as the run continues, or if the run's already over, then also we'll bring you back to discuss about that. That was a good prediction in that case. But from everything that I've been looking at, it seems like gold, according to the gold gurus, it should hit 10,000 in the next 5-10 years. Who knows? We'll say 10,000 USD. But that doesn't mean I'm right. That's just...
No, but you're going to know far more about that than me. Everybody is talking gold locally, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think you're right. It's the crypto market that's sucking out some of the blood from commodities, which is gold and silver specifically, with the youngsters more headed towards the digital world than the physical, tangible. So it's just something to keep an eye on. I think once the crypto run is over, it will all be rotated back into commodities, in my opinion, which will happen maybe later in the year or next year when this run for the crypto is over, which seems like 2021 is all for crypto, looks like, so far. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, if there was a trigger event, all of a sudden put a question mark over the integrity of crypto, watch out, gold and silver, watch out.
Yeah. There's certainly a few questions around crypto, but I think it's becoming, Bitcoin specifically, is becoming a little bit more legit piece of technology, especially if you understand the technology itself, and then you look at likes of MicroStrategy, Tesla, converting their cash, corporate cash, into Bitcoin. That gives a lot of legitimacy to the space, in my opinion. But I could be wrong. No one knows.
Yeah, it all hinges on, you know, the Federal Reserve and Reserve Banks of this world. If they decided they wanted their own currency, you know, what impact would that have? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
But that has been flagged, and that's a risk point. So, you know, you can certainly live with the upside. Can you live with the downside? And I always look at, with any investment, you know, my upside potential has got to be greater than my downside risk. Otherwise, I don't invest.
Yeah.
How high can it go? What could it be? Well, it could be also if they came in and brought in policy changes, could it be worthless?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I don't know the downside, but the upside, you know, could blow the lid off.
Yeah. So, put it this way, you can't get 400 to 500 or 1,000% return in the market without looking at the downside, which is basically zero. It can all go to zero. So it's a high risk, high return strategy, but you got to understand the risk. You got to understand the market timings and all that stuff. So
as long as you don't back the truck up. Don't back the truck up into it. If you want to have a play, you know, take your 1% to 10% of your funds, which you've nominated towards a certain thing, which is a bit of a play, which is the downside is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Where all your other investments, your downside shouldn't be zero.
Yeah.
And have a play, you know, like, why not? You know, if you don't get some enjoyment out of your out of your investments.
Yeah, definitely. That's the right way to do it.
take the casino money and put it into Bitcoin instead, basically. Isn't it? Give it a slot.
Oh, any day of the week. I mean, there's a hint of it, you know, excitement, ongoing excitement. I'm not a gambler. I'm not, I don't find any, even if I lost a dollar, I just don't find a dollar worth of enjoyment in it. But investing in Bitcoin is a wild ride. You get a bit of enjoyment out of that. And, you know, as long as you don't let it go to your ego and go, hey, how clever am I? No, you're just a bit lucky, you know, a bit fortunate. Yeah, you've got to respect luck. But it's an interesting psychology, though, because people stay out, and all of a sudden they go, oh, this Bitcoin thing is real, and they finally step in. That's usually the time to...
Totally.
Yeah. No, you're right, Gav. Look, really enjoyed the discussion, mate. I'm sure we'll have you back at some point when either gold takes off or Bitcoin, whatever it is, because that will tell us what's happening in the property market. And the listeners, hope you guys enjoyed the chat, and we'll have you back at some point. Cheers, Chaz.
See you guys. Thank you.